First Super Tuesday, I guess this would maybe be Super Wednesday, and I will call the February 6th meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. We are very, very, very fortunate and honored to have our own Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury, with us this morning to present, I think, a presentation on some ideas for election changes and also perhaps to share some insights he might have from last evening. I know I heard in another committee somebody testified that the Elections Division had been getting calls the last few days from Oregonians wondering where their ballots were for yesterday's election. I know I've gotten some from my own constituents wondering where are we going to be and how are we going to impact this process, and obviously after last night now there's a chance, I think, that Oregonians will have an effect. So good morning, welcome to Elections, Ethics, and Rules, and please go ahead, Secretary Bradbury, and
thank
tell
you,
us
Madam
what you want
Chair.
Us to know.
For the record, Bill Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State. It's a pleasure to be here this morning to meet with all of you to talk about this this issue. I think all of us went through the it was a fairly remarkable primary that took place last night. 24 states. Basically, it was a mini, it was sort of half the nation voting on one day. And I'll comment on it later, but the thing that I guess amazes me, I used to be a media member, but as a media member, I would have covered the primaries and done the best job I could, and that's what the media, I think, did. But nobody really seems to talk about how there's, you know, 24 states voting at one time and how what changes that makes in the primary process for, you know, in terms of people's access to the candidates, et cetera. But I think that the remarkable thing is that we've seen a very steady evolution, or not steady, but in the last 10, 15 years, seen a real evolution of the primary process. And 2008, this year, is the most front-loaded presidential primary in history. 24 states all voted yesterday, and in addition to the earlier states that already voted, nearly 30 states have voted as of today. So what does front-loaded mean? Front-loaded means that a whole bunch of states rush to the front of the line in order to capitalize on early coverage and attention. I think California very clearly and very consciously said, we're tired of being the last state to vote. We want to be one of the first, and we want to get lots of attention. And I think they've certainly managed to do that in this in the change that they made. And basically, two dozen states raced to be the first state to go. Oregon, along with a number of other states, refused to join the mad dash to the front. And I guess the thing we can really feel good about is that we're saving $2.8 million by not rushing to the front of the line. And you really do have to think, okay, so how much attention would be paid to Oregon and how many candidates would have come to Oregon if we'd had our primary on February 5th and we'd had a primary yesterday? Probably not too many. But you never know. Barack Obama might have come to Portland instead of Boise. I suppose that's a possibility. And our primary is more than 3 months away. But just, I think you all know this, but I just want to remind you, it wasn't always like this. In 2004, which is not too long ago, it's the last presidential race, only seven states had gone by February 6th, and all of the election dates up to February 6th were relatively spread out. Now, here's a comparison of the timing of elections over the past 16 years. In 1992, March was the busiest month, but the election stretched substantially through May and into June. And then by 2000, elections had become more concentrated in March, but again, May and June were still active election months. And here's where we are today. The calendar has moved forward and become far more concentrated in January and February. Now, here's a slightly different look at the same problem. In 2004, primary and caucus dates were spread out from February to May, as you can see by the handy color coding that's sort of a little hard to see, but you can see the different colors of the different states. And here's what this year looks like. The country has gone almost completely khaki. So, you might ask, well, so why is this a problem?
We're khaki.
And contrary to the media's treatment of Tsunami Tuesday as a perfectly normal, acceptable situation, it has major ramifications for American democracy. Now, there's plenty of evidence in the 2008 race. After the early primaries, New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina, and Nevada, candidates had fewer than 2 weeks to campaign in 24 states. On the GOP side, Romney, McCain, and Huckabee carved out their states and focused only on those, meaning that they never visited many, many states. Not surprisingly, those candidates did well in their chosen states and not so well in the states that they wrote off and didn't visit. Now, on the Democratic side, which uses proportional delegate counts in most states, Obama and Clinton ran in practically all 22 states, but really just barely. They spent very little time in each state, sometimes visiting three or more states in a single day. It's called Let's Have an Election on the Airport Tarmac. Visits obviously typically consisted of campaign rallies. In other words, Republicans ran campaigns that were deep but not very wide, and the Democrats ran campaigns that were far-reaching but, frankly, pretty shallow. On both sides, voters had next to no opportunity to get to know their candidates. And candidates, and this I think is the absolutely critical issue, candidates had next to no opportunity to get to know regional issues. And that's the reality here, is that you just don't really learn much about the country when you're campaigning in this kind of a front-loaded way. Instead, surrogates like Chelsea Clinton, Mitt Romney's son, Bill Clinton, Michelle Obama, did many of the visits in various states. Both sides also relied heavily on TV ads to get their message out. And experts estimate that $800 million will be spent on ads in the 2008 presidential race. $800 million. Now, the more that you move toward a national one-day primary, guess what? The more important money becomes, and the less voters will really know about the candidates. Let me just give you one example. In California exit polls, most of the voters who said they'd only made up their minds in the last 3 days voted for Obama, suggesting that they had needed more time to examine him. Had California voted in March or May, would this have been a different result in California? I don't know. I just posed the question. So there is really a way out of this nonsense. And it's called rotating regional primaries. And it's a proposal that's been put forward by the National Association of Secretaries of State. And the idea is really very simple. Divide the country into four regions, the West, the South, the Midwest, and the East. Each region has about the same number of electoral votes. They've been divided that way, so they're about the same number of electoral votes. And one region goes every month starting in March. So you have a primary in March, a primary in April, and a primary in May, and a primary in June in each region. And then you call it rotating because in the next presidential election, it's a different region starts and you rotate around the country in a different order. And this is a system that really can get us to a place where candidates get to spend time in regions and find out regional issues from specific states. It is a way for the candidates to get to know our issues, and it's certainly a way for us as voters to get to know better the issues of the various candidates and what they bring forward. So I'm very supportive of this proposal. This proposal or a different, I mean, there are several different regional rotating proposals, but basically people have really a number of people have centered on we need to change the primary system because it's way too front-loaded, way too nuts. And it's going to be very interesting because the decision has to be made by the first has to be made by the Republican convention. And the reason it has to be made by the Republican convention first is because they can only change the rules when they're meeting in convention. So the Democrats have a rules committee that can change their rules. I don't know why it isn't staying lit up, but oh well. But the Democrats have a rules committee that can change the rules in between conventions. But the Republicans have a situation where they can only change their rules in convention. So 8 years ago, there was a proposal to move to rotating regional primaries that had made it through the entire Republican rules committee initially and was going to be put to the floor. And it's a decision that the Republican or the Democratic, and you know, it's a decision that the presidential nominee has to make on the night that he's just been nominated to decide whether or not to put that issue on the floor the next day, which is his or her crowning glory day. And the rotating regional primaries proposal has enough votes in the states to enact it, but it has a number of states that are, raise a lot of concerns on the floor. So there would be a fight. And so the question becomes, it boils down to a very simple question. And that is, in this case, the Republican presidential candidate want to have a potential floor fight on his first day of nomination? That's really sort of what's deciding this. And I understand. If I was that candidate, I would think twice about putting something forward. All I can say is I hope that people recognize that this process is pretty broken and that they are willing to put forward some alternative at their convention. We'll see. I mean, it's a little hard. People always point out to me, the process is broken, but it resulted in the nomination of the person who's about to become the nominee for president. So does that person think the process is broken? Well, maybe not. But I will say that, people like John McCain I don't know that he'll be the nominee, but it seems pretty likely. And people like him have been the kind of people who take positions like that on issues like this. And I think these are the regions, so no big deal. But I don't need to show you that. Anyway, okay. So there we go.
Well, great. That's certainly thought-provoking. I know that this committee had a discussion about that idea, I believe, presented by you during the regular session.
Right.
This committee also, I guess it's a little painful to remind us of this, but we did pass a bill out of our committee that would have moved Oregon's presidential primary to February 5th, and then, because, as you said, of the cost it would have imposed,
$2.8 million to do a standalone presidential primary.
So I guess one thing I would pose, because I get this question a lot from my own constituents, is given this is an idea for reform that now would be aimed at 2012, do you have any thoughts about what we will be looking at May 20th here in Oregon? Obviously, a lot of pundits last night were saying, and this morning were saying, well, you know, ironically, now it looks like, because this contest, at least on the Democratic side, could go down to the wire, perhaps Oregon, even with its late date, could have an impact after all.
Right. I actually, as unlikely as I thought it would be, as of maybe 2 days ago, I actually now believe that it's going to become, the Oregon primary is going to be a very contested primary, at least on the Democratic side. I don't know how, I mean, there's a clear at least 2-1 lead that McCain has over the other two candidates on the Republican side. But at least on the Democratic side, it's pretty clear that they're just going to go back and forth. And Oregon's delegates are, you know, in the primary, are not winner-take-all. They're divided proportionally, just like most, I think all Democratic primaries are proportional division. So, you know, it's like there's going to be us and Puerto Rico and North Dakota and Montana. Isn't that right? I think that's right. That's we're the last little stand, and we're all little states. It's kind of amazing.
Yes. Well, it looks like you have provoked some thoughts. So, Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Secretary. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been discussing this with some constituency, and their only concern, which maybe you have an answer for because you've been involved in this throughout the United States, is instead of a regionalization like is on the map, because you see you have all the southern states in one whack,
right.
You have all the western states
yes.
in one whack, the northeast and then the north central. We're wondering if we shouldn't kind of get a cross-grain approach on it, where you have from the north to the central to the south, all in one, kind of like a time zone.
Right. Well, very good point. And there are several other proposals. And my impression from talking with the head of the, I'm not sure he's the head, but he's one of the very active members of the Republican National Committee, is that they're more likely to enact I think it's called the Delaware Plan, and it basically starts with they divide the primaries into six primaries over 4 months, so you have about 3 weeks between each set of primaries, and you start with smaller states and move to larger states. And so you don't have just the West and just the South and just the Midwest. You have smaller states all over the place, and you have, you know, medium sized, you know, you have six categories of states till you get to the biggest. And that's the proposal in the Delaware plan. Of course, those that just rush to the front of the line, California and New York, might not like that plan because they've moved to the front of the line, and they're not necessarily going to want to be put to the end of the line. But we'll see. I mean, it's going to be an interesting... I frankly think the issue is going to be whether people really feel that the current system is broken or not. That's what it's going to take. If people sort of go, well, you know, we really didn't see the candidates very much, or then they might... We might see a change. And otherwise, I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. the map that you just nuked out, I have to comment, because it always comes up. Is there anything we can do about the sacred nature of New Hampshire and Iowa?
You can just say no.
You have to, You have to change their state law. Their law. Their state law in New Hampshire is they will be the first primary. Presidential primary. Period. So you have to. New Hampshire would have to change its state law, and that's Iowa would have to change its law in terms of, I don't know if it's a law. I assume it's a law, but in terms of the caucuses.
Well, clearly you can't, and it's minor, but it does rankle a bit for everyone else. But under a system like this, they would get far less attention because.
Oh, far less.
And I would say that under this system, I like the regional nature in that if you come to the West, you're going to talk water and you're going to talk public lands, and you're going to have to talk about those things. But the truth of the matter is, I think for the electorate, I have no expectation, and maybe it's because I live in a small state, that I'm going to meet any of these candidates and hear them talk a stump speech, because I turn on the media every night and hear them day in and day out. I mean, it isn't like I need to know what they look like and what they say, and we've had endless debates to the point of debate exhaustion, where you turn on your TV and say, another debate, and you click something else. So in a way, you're swimming uphill here, because I don't think the electorate feels like they're not seeing enough of the candidates.
Because actually, that Representative Berger, that actually is a very good point, because it's reflective of the age we're in, which is much more the electronic communication and television age, and what people expect to see.
Yeah.
And it's not so much, and it's true, it's not so much that they expect to see the candidate at their door or at their shopping center, as it is that they expect to see stuff about the candidate and learn that way. So that's a very good point.
And we have, I've got two hands. I did want to comment, though, one of the things that was striking watching the early states is that repeatedly saw people being interviewed about how they had incredible, hand-to-hand, face-to-face contact with so many of the major candidates. They would go into these small places, little hamlets and towns, and almost everybody they talked to had seen at least one of the candidates, if not three. So I think that's one of the things that provokes some reaction when people are sitting back in their homes, in Salem or Bend or wherever, is, boy, they're getting all of this attention. They're getting to meet these people up close and personal.
Right.
By the time they get to us, no one's going to care. And so I think although Representative Berger is exactly right that it's a nationalized election to some extent, it's also that sort of politics is happening at a very grassroots level, and people are feeling like, when will that ever come to me? So,
right, I think that's, very clearly, that's particularly true in New Hampshire and in Iowa. I mean, it's phenomenal hands-on retail politics in Iowa and New Hampshire. South Carolina and Nevada a little bit, but once you get to February 5th, it's not retail politics. It's totally on TV and campaign organizations on the ground.
Representative Hunt.
I wonder if, looking at states that have maybe a high percentage of permanent absentees that have voted up until now, obviously I don't think any of the states that have voted until now have vote by mail, but
California was close.
Okay.
They don't have vote by mail. Pardon me for interrupting you,
but they don't have
vote by mail, but they have no excuse absentee, and they had, I think it's close to 50% of people voting.
Yeah. So, based on the experience, and based on something I read, I had the sense that Florida has a lot of permanent absentees as well. In those states that have a high percentage of those who are actually voting by mail, have you noticed any trend in terms of candidates paying more attention with time, money, paying attention to issues in those states, knowing that those voters are actually, Californians were not just voting yesterday, many of them were voting in the last two or three weeks because of those high permanent absentees. And any sense at this point of if those states had greater attention paid to them because of permanent absentees?
No, I have no sense that they'll get greater attention. The only thing I'd say is I'm quite sure that those states that vote a lot by mail totally confound the campaign manager. Because, as you say, it's 3 weeks. I mean, people get their ballot, almost 3 weeks before the election. So they're real used to, and February 5th is a classic example of just everybody focusing, huge amounts of money on the election in the last week. And guess what? And I think in California, that would be an interesting analysis, because there's a whole lot of voters who voted in California way before the last week. So I think that actually would be a very interesting thing to study.
Representative Beckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Two questions, if I may. And I can't remember if you answered this when you were here previously on this subject. The National Associations of Secretary of States, are they unanimously behind this regional plan?
Yes. They're unanimous behind it because we allowed New Hampshire and Iowa to still maintain the first Bill Gardner and former Secretary Chet Colbert, who's now the governor of Iowa, were supportive of it when was put forward because
I'm going to defend that a little bit and also maybe ask about the Delaware plan in the same context. The idea of a candidate who's not extremely well-funded at the start having Iowa and New Hampshire as places where they can actually run a campaign without having millions of dollars in their campaign account would then give it that candidate, if that candidate caught fire, that Mike Huckabee, for instance, this time, is now a national candidate because he was able to make a stake in Iowa, which would then give that candidate a chance to compete on these regional primaries later in the campaign cycle.
Right.
And assuming that's what the Delaware plan is thinking about, too, and having the small states go first, that would give candidates who do not have the large campaign chest an opportunity to compete.
I think that's basically, that's certainly why, that's a large part of why the Secretary of State plan was willing to keep New Hampshire and Iowa, because it's really classic retail politics, not just, you don't win Iowa or New Hampshire with television.
Right.
You may affect Iowa or New Hampshire, but you don't win Iowa and New Hampshire with television. You win it by real hard work,
right,
retail politics.
I think a couple of our candidates lost it in 2004 with television, so. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's a good question.
Yes.
So we certainly don't need to use the whole hour that we asked you to spend with us. I guess the last question I would ask you, Mr. Secretary, is whether you or your office has been thinking about strategies to increase voter participation. That's something you could come back and talk about at a future hearing if you don't have thoughts about it now. But it's clear, and this was true 4 years ago as well, that the level of attention to elections is so high and so intense, and it will be again, and it does always seem like an opportunity to move us forward in terms of some things that we can do to get people in the habit, and particularly to me that would be young people or other disenfranchised groups. Have you got any thoughts about how this opportunity can be used to get those people engaged, not just on a one-time basis, but keep them engaged?
Well, the thing that I find so exciting that's going on right now is a huge participation in primaries and lots and lots of voters. But particularly what's so exciting to me is to see this huge, really huge increase in young voters. I mean, they are becoming, they rightfully become the largest voting bloc. Right? I mean, if they all vote. And they're really moving in that direction right now. And it's just, I just get so thrilled, because that's what we're, that's certainly one of the things I've been focused on, is trying to get young people to really participate and participate fully in the election process. I am quite struck with, it's intriguing. I don't know why, but Barack Obama seems to be really inspiring a whole lot of young people. It's really, if you look at the breaks in the states that have gone one way or the other, it's really interesting to see the huge number of young people that are voting for Barack Obama. So it's just fascinating to me. It's very exciting to me to see a candidate that actually really has the effect of inspiring a new generation of electors to join the electorate. I could only dream of having anywhere near the impact that someone like Barack Obama is having on young people right now. I can go to high schools and I can do mock election exercises and the like and really try to get people on board. And we have awfully good turnout in Oregon. We have the third highest presidential turnout in the country, and the only two states that have higher presidential turnout than Oregon are two states that allow same-day registration. So we are the third highest in the country, and the two states that are higher are same-day registration states. So, I'm real proud of Oregonians. I'm real proud of our commitment, our participation, and I'm real excited to see a real shift. I would call it a glacial shift that's taking place in terms of who's voting. And traditionally, I'll stop talking, but traditionally, basically, the voting block, the largest voting block has been senior citizens, has traditionally been the largest voting block. And the young people are now, they're not surpassing the senior citizens, but they're competing. And that, I think, is very, very healthy for our democracy to have that kind of a situation.
Yes, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Secretary, touching on getting people to vote more often, what are the current requirements for somebody to register to vote, both for registering themselves and if someone else is registering them, what type of documentation is needed?
Brenda, is Brenda here? I'm going to
ask so that we can discuss
Brenda,
it.
Brenda Bays is here, and we're going to ask her to come up because there's been some changes, so I want to make sure we speak correctly.
Great, thank you.
Representative Rosemont, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I'm the Deputy Director for the State Elections Division. As far as requirements for registering people to vote, there are a lot of parties that continually try to do registration drives to register people to vote, and anyone can go out and try and get them to register. Department of Transportation, as you're aware, required to do that. All state agencies, social service agencies, are required to offer that opportunity to their clients, and there's really no restriction on who can offer someone that opportunity. The only requirement is, however, is that they have to turn the cards into the Secretary of State or County Elections Office within 5 days.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I just moved to Oregon and I want to register to vote, don't I have to provide a copy of my license or something like that when I send in my registration?
Thank you, Representative Shields. It's a requirement by the Help America Vote Act that you provide a Oregon driver's license number and attest that you do not have one if you do not have one, and then you are required to provide the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. If you have neither of those, you have to provide a copy with your name and address of a document.
That's what I was getting at. Thank you very much.
I know one of the things, I also wanted to acknowledge that we have Bill Burgess, the Marion County Clerk, in the audience too, and we're very pleased to see you here this morning. One of the things that I caught when I was watching television last night is a lot of publicity about how easy it is to register by just going online, printing out registration forms, and so obviously I think that your offices have done excellent work in trying to make this process as user-friendly as possible. And I mean, obviously, it is an opportunity, as we've been saying, for people to see that they can participate. And I think the challenge is always that this happens every 4 years, but then how do we keep people engaged? How do we not lose those voters and keep them as excited about some of the more state and local things that they face that arguably will have as bigger an impact on their lives? So,
Madam Chair, Oregon has created sort of a double-edged sword in terms of voter registration, and that double-edged sword is the double majority. And so I have just said I don't real tough luck. I really believe it's important for everybody to participate, and that's the side of the coin I've fallen on, is just getting as many people registered as possible. There is another side to that, which is the more people you have registered, the larger the number of people you have to get to vote yes to get certain measures passed, for local government funding. So there's sort of a two-sided coin in terms of really dramatically increasing voter participation.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Well, and the good news is, I think you hit on a very good point, and the good news is all six of us and the vast majority of the House and the Senate did refer out to voters this coming November to reform the double majority, not to totally eliminate it, but at least for mayor November elections, to say there's no disincentive to register or to go out and register new voters. We should be about participation, and we should be about majority wins. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Oregonians will affirm our action. I am interested, you talked about the voter registration barrier. I mean, it seems like we've got such natural advantages and encouragements for people to register and to vote. I think the voters' pamphlet statement is one of those. I think the vote by mail is clearly one of those. It seems like our lengthy voter registration requirement before the election is the main remaining barrier, not just for young people, but for some others, but especially for young people, where by the time the wave of excitement about the election comes, it's already past the deadline, and they're just out of luck, even if they're longtime Oregonians.
Right.
Do you see that as the main remaining barrier to young people participating, or are there some other things as well?
Well, I would certainly say that for particularly for younger people who are not, normally not used to participating in the electoral process, the 20-day requirement. And a lot of times, this last primary is a good example. February 5th, how much were people excited about these candidates and these primaries on January, 20th?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not much. I mean, the reality is that there is a growing excitement as you get closer to an election. And I think, dealing with that deadline would certainly improve participation, particularly among those who traditionally aren't as well registered as the rest of us.
Well, great. I really appreciate your being here
early
the morning after, and I think we actually managed to cover an awful lot of the topics that are the most significant ones that we have looked at during the regular session. So hopefully we'll have a chance to have you back again at some point during February.
I'm here.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Committee members, we do have a hearing tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and we have... I believe three different resolutions with witnesses who wish to testify on them, so we'll attempt to start pretty close to on time, and then we will not be meeting on Friday, and at this point, I'll make this official tomorrow, I believe we will also not be meeting on Monday morning, so perhaps that'll make life a little easier for some of our members, and this is in part because so many of your other committees are facing very, very stringent deadlines that are looming, and so I think our letting them have a little more time to do their work may be helpful to the whole process. With nothing further to come before us, committee members, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.